Welcome to the Tailored Life Podcast, the one and only fitness and nutrition podcast that goes way beyond just training and nutrition and helps you create a life by design. I'm your host, Cody McBroom. I am a father, a husband, entrepreneur, trainer, and a nutritionist, and I am here to make you better. I spend every single day of my life being obsessed with personal development and how to live a better life, how to live an above average life, how to excel in every way I possibly can. And this podcast is a glorified hobby that allows me to teach you how to do it with me. So welcome. If you're new to the show, thank you so much for checking it out. Thank you for being here. I hope that you enjoy what you're about to hear. I have a strong feeling you will. And I just hope that you take away a lot of value from this podcast. If you are here once again, you are a returning listener. Thank you for coming back. It is because you had received so much value that you would be here again. And I appreciate you for that. I'm always humbled to know that people are listening to my voice on their drives, on their walks, while they're cooking, while they're training, whatever it may be. And I'm just so stoked to share as much knowledge as I can with you today. So today is going to be a rapid fire Q&A. And so I actually, I mean it this time when I say rapid fire. Normally when I say rapid fire, it is not actually a rapid fire. It takes me forever to answer questions because I have a hard time just giving a random, like a one word answer. You know, I have a hard time not creating a ton of extra insights and, you know, whatever it may be. But with this one, this is actually going to come from the broadcast channel. So I brought this up on last Monday's podcast, as you're listening to this, I believe it would be. And that's what we're going to dive into. We're actually going to dive into them. And I have a lot of questions. So I really do have to make this a rapid fire if I'm going to get through them all. But I'm going to link the broadcast channel in the description of this podcast. So if you want to go check it out, you can do so. It's pretty dope. It's like, you know, and you'll see this with a couple of the questions, the way they asked and what they're asking about. It's basically my, like, I called it a training log because it's literally where I'm sharing what I'm doing. So as I'm recording this, it's Tuesday. I'm going to be traveling to Dallas on Thursday. And so I'm planning on sharing a bunch of content in there around traveling and staying on point. So what am I doing on the road? What am I doing with the food I eat at the airport? How, like, am I eating at the airport or am I fasting through it? Am I packing any snacks? Am I packing any protein? So on and so forth. So my plan is to dive into as much of that as I can week to week so that I can share my training, my nutrition, my journey. I'm in the quote unquote off season of my physique journey because I do plan on competing one more time at least with the goal of getting a pro card or qualifying for a show that allows me to qualify for my pro card. Because there's rankings to this, there's levels. So I have to compete at a show and win, and that show has to be a qualifying show. So basically I would win that, and that would grant me the opportunity to compete at another show to get my pro card. So it's kind of like you have like a show that grants you the pro qualifier show. And then once you win that, you can go compete to actually get your pro card. So anyway, it's a journey and I have a ways to go with my bulk. I'm gaining weight right now, trying to build as much muscle as possible. And I have about a year left. I'm going to compete next year, probably in May or June. So just over a year left of gaining. And that means I'm probably going to have a mini cut here soon. And then we'll have a prep, you know, early next year. So I'll be sharing the whole process. And people in there right now are seeing just how much food I'm eating. And it's absurd. I've never ate so much food in my life, but I'm loving it. I'm loving the pumps in the gym. It's uncomfortable sometimes because it's a lot of food, but nonetheless, it is a blast. So I posted in there and everybody's been super cool, super engaging, loving the tips that I'm throwing in there based on the equipment I use in the gym, the training exercise I choose, all that stuff. Some of them are actually even doing the same program as me. So if you are a member of the Tailored Trainer or you want to become one and you want to try it out, you can go to thetailoredtrainer.com. It's linked in the description of this podcast. You can get a 7-day free trial and you can actually do my program with me. So there's a program in there. It is for guys that want to build muscle. It's upper body focused. That's what I get judged and critiqued on as a men's physique athlete. So that's what the main focus is of this program. It's called Lean Bulk, the Lean Bulk. And it is exactly what I'm doing. It's a 5-day split and you can literally do it with me. I'm on week 2. So I finished a whole block and then I tweaked some things going into this block that I thought could be improved upon my program. And I dove into it at the same time as everybody else. Actually, I lie. I'm recording this, I'm actually on week 1 technically, but If you're listening to this, that means I'm probably on week two. Nonetheless, if you want to join me, if you want to be have the same goals as me, if you're a dude that's looking to build muscle, or you're on a cut and you want to maintain as much muscle or recomp a bit and you want to have an upper body focus, this is a great program. I'm super excited about it, and I love knowing that people are doing it with me. So you can check that out. Again, 7-day free trial. Jump in with me on that. And if you want to join the Discord channel, the broadcast channel, Instagram broadcast channel, it is just a thread of my journey that I'm sharing, so that you can take tips and tricks from my physique pursuit and you can implement them into your own training and nutrition supplementation. I'll drop a link for that as well. It's also just right. I have it highlighted on my Instagram profile. So you can just click the button. It's called Training Log. Now, I posted in there for some questions. I said, you guys get first dibs. So part of being in that group, I'm going to give them first dibs on questions for these podcasts. And they asked a lot of really good questions. So I'm going to dive into those. And we're going to try to do a rapid fire because, let's see, there is, how many questions we got here? Twelve solid questions. I actually left a couple out because I don't think they were necessary for the podcast, but yeah, we're going to get into these. I'm going to take a drink of Rockstar, which I feel like they should sponsor me. I'm going to reach out. If anybody's got a plug for sugar-free Rockstars or just Rockstar, I guess the company, your boy's looking for a new podcast sponsorship specifically for that energy drink. No other energy drink, just Rockstars, because that's the only one I like. All right. First question, really, really good question. I'm not going to put the names on here because some of them, they're Instagram handles. And also when I click on it, it doesn't show me for some reason. When I pull up all the photos, I just see, or the questions, I just see the image of their face. So this first one is really good. I think it's going to apply to a lot of people. How do you decipher the length of a reverse diet for a client? So this is a really good question. How long should you be reverse dieting? The reality is that it depends. You know, we could say some very blanket terms, and I would say anywhere between 0.5 to 1.5 times the duration of the diet can be acceptable. This is going to be based on a semi-aggressive approach and a semi-conservative approach. So what that would look like is if somebody is, you know, dieting for 3 months, 12 weeks, that's a 6-week minimum reverse diet. On the longer side of it, that's a pretty long time, right? 1.5. I really rarely ever recommend going that far. And typically when we're going to go beyond one times the length, so doing a full 12-week reverse in a 12-week diet scenario, the 1.5, what is that going to be? That's going to be 18 weeks. The only time that's going to be necessary is if you go beyond your old maintenance, right? This is very rare, and this isn't the goal of a reverse diet. The goal of a reverse diet is to bring you back up to a new maintenance or your true maintenance and just leave you there, right? We want you to get to maintenance so that you're healthy, you feel good. Ideally, you maintain some of the physique you created, but ultimately what we really want to be sure of as well is that we don't get to a place where we're just like turning it into a food competition. We don't want to just keep on increasing calories higher and higher and higher just for the sake of it. However, there is some scenarios where individuals will go through a cut, they lose a lot of fat, and during that process, they become a completely different individual, right? They go through a diet, and I would say anybody has this internal shift and change and transformation, and we talk about this all the time. It's part of the reason why the R in Tailored, like you can see it on my shirt right now because I'm wearing a TLRD shirt, the R is inverted because transformation starts from within, right? You have to make the mental, the internal, the psychological change and decision to create change and commit to the acts of discipline and willpower and all these things in order to create a transformation. So we all see that. However, there's a lot of people who go through this weight loss transformation and they also see that their step count goes through the roof. They see that they're more active. Now they're able to go and play pickleball with their kids, or they pick up tennis as a hobby or hiking or whatever it may be. Now they're very active individuals. And when they're active individuals, what we will find is that the reverse diet, we are able to bring their maintenance beyond what it once was. Somebody starts at 2,000 calories, you diet them down to 1,300 calories, they lose a bunch of weight, and then we reverse them back up to 2,500. That doesn't make sense on paper because they're lighter than when they started and we're only eating 2,000 calories. But they have more muscle, they have higher activity levels, they have better hormones, better sleep. So there are situations where that happens, and in those cases, it might be 1.5 times the length of the diet. And it's because we reverse diet beyond what it was. Now, if I had to put a blanket statement on just the reverse diet itself, I would probably say 0.5 to 1 times the length if we're trying to stay lean. So if somebody diets for 3 months, we're going to be dieting for or reverse dieting for 6 to 12 weeks, right? 1.5 to 3 months based on a 12-week or three-month diet. If we're trying to also stay lean, if somebody's a competitor, it's going to be a little bit different. We might want to ramp that up a little bit faster. And I would say, you know, 0.5 times length is the extreme, because some of those diets might be 4, 5, or even 6 months going into the show. I don't want to lengthen that too much. There's a lot of people who would disagree with the statement of 0.5 to 1 as a whole, just because that seems slow, especially for those individuals. And I would just say that there's also a scale of, let's say, adjustments in intensity that we're implementing into this reverse diet. So to explain that a little bit more in depth, think about it like this. If I put somebody into a reverse diet and I'm very aggressive out the gate, it might only take 2 to 3 weeks to actually reverse some of those negative symptoms they're experiencing from the diet. So our reverse diet, from a standpoint of getting them from negative to positive biofeedback after a deep deficit and a long cut or a show prep or physique prep or anything that really put them into a deep deficit and cause a lot of stress, let's be honest, because, you know, hard diets and losing a lot of body fat can cause stress on the body. If you're obese and you lose a lot of fat, your body's actually less stressed, but that's besides the point. If we go really hard out the gate for 2 to 3 weeks by increasing our calories pretty dramatically out the front end, it might only take 2 to 3 weeks to reestablish a healthy baseline of our biofeedback. But now I'm just babying the reverse diet for weeks and weeks on end. So I'm still at that 0.5 to 1 times the length of the diet, right? So I say that to provide context, because if you go, okay, we're starting reverse diet, you just got done with a super big deficit and a long fat loss phase, I'm going to add 5 grams of carbs. They're not going to feel very good. That is not the right approach. You might say, hey, I'm going to add 50 or 100 grams of carbs, and then I'm going to go 5 to 10 grams of carbs. I rarely ever do five. Let's be real. Like, let's say like 10 to 20 grams of carbs, small bumps up every 1, 2, or 3 weeks after we've already made an aggressive approach. So the total length of the diet is still going to be that. The total length of the reverse diet is still going to be that, at least 0.5 to 1 times the length, because the reverse diet officially stops when we are confident that we've reached a good baseline. We're not going to need to adjust calories anymore unless we want to go into a gaining phase and start building muscle and adding weight. And it's almost across the board, right? Obviously, the shorter end or the more aggressive on the front end of the reverse diet is going to be based on the individual being deeper. So the less body fat they have, the harder they dieted, or the lower their calories got, or the longer they're in deficit, the more likely it is that we have to implement some of these more aggressive, shorter approaches. But for the most part, if I had to put just a time frame on it, I probably would say 0.5 to 1 times the length in total, even though most of the aggressive adjustments are going to be on the front end, because we can reverse some of those symptoms in a matter of 2 to 3 weeks. And how I decipher that is just based on how hard they dieted, how low their body fat got, and how long they were in the deficit for, or how negatively impactful the diet from a biofeedback perspective was. All right, so number two, we got how to work with someone who has shame around food and those who are afraid of failure. So we'll start with those who are afraid of failure, because I think that's more common, and it's an easier one to answer. If you are afraid of failure, you just haven't come terms. If you're afraid of failure, you just haven't come to terms with what reality entails of success or getting results, is honestly the gist of it. And ultimately, anyone who is afraid of failure has to detach the judgment, the emotion, the feeling that is associated with it emotionally, and has to focus on what logically happens when we fail. When we fail, we learn, and when we learn, we grow. Now, there's a lot of discomfort in the process of failing to then later succeed, because we have to fail in order to learn how to do it better, or do it right, or just not do it wrong again. Or it might be something that you do the same thing over and over and over again until you just get it done, right? I think the most common denominator of very, very successful people in the world and in history is that they have a relentless ability to not give up. Honestly, most successful people aren't abnormally gifted in some way or another. They're not super lucky, anything like that. The vast majority of them just didn't stop trying until they succeeded. They have a relentless ability to not give up, even when things are hard. So for somebody who's afraid of failure, you have to ask them questions. And I think this is the problem with most coaches today. Most coaches are afraid to ask their clients more questions. Okay, you have shame around food. Why? What food? When does that happen? How does it happen? Who is around when that happens? Is there a certain environment or situation that it happens in? You binged. When did that happen? Why did it happen? Was there a certain stress that happened before you did it? Where are you at? What is your environment like? You feel like you're judged, or you are afraid of failure, or you are worried about XYZ. Where are you at? Why is it happening? What is the situation that happened or occurred right before this scenario occurred? These are the questions you have to ask, because you have to ultimately determine the root cause of the problem, right? If somebody's binging or having cravings or has a shame around bad food, good food, like the most common generic flexible dieting style answer or question around this is going to be the, let's just have it in moderation, right? You can have one Oreo a day, every day if you want to. That's not the answer. One Oreo a day, like, I don't care how quote unquote flexible that sounds on paper or if it fits in your macros. Nobody wants one Oreo. Nobody. And there's no replacement for an Oreo. Nothing tastes like an Oreo. You can go try healthy Oreos. They don't taste like Oreos. That's why they're Oreos. So there is an element of eliminating this and then teaching the client, do you need this Oreo? No, I don't. Okay, perfect. You said it, not me. Let's establish that and let's commit to that. I want you to determine why you don't need that, why you don't want to feel like you need that, right? I use this example in a group coaching training session, kind of like we're building out some things in our systems and stuff, and like use this as an example. When doing that, I used to associate hotel rooms with wine. Every time I traveled, I'm traveling, I'm in a hotel, I'm gonna get some wine. Like, that's just what I do. I drink some wine in my hotel, relax, watch TV. It's actually really nice and relaxing by myself. But then I would go take a travel, like a trip, and it'd be like Tuesday to Friday. Now, Tuesday night, Wednesday night, Thursday night, I'm drinking wine by myself. Like, I don't wanna do that. Not only does that sound like a characteristic I don't agree with, but also that's a lot of calories. It's taking me out of, away from my goal, so on and so forth. So I had to eliminate the thought that when I travel, I drink wine. That's not the scenario. We tie these things together and then we get to a place where we need it, right? And this is where people go wrong. But you won't find that out unless you ask questions. So again, if you're with, this is asked from a coach, obviously, and they said how to work with somebody who is who has shame around food or who is afraid of failure. But if you're afraid of failure, you have to eliminate the emotional bias or attachment you have to the feelings around that failure. The feeling around failure is usually going to be judgment. It's going to be embarrassment. It's going to be worthiness, lack thereof, really, worthiness. And you have to erase those things and actually redefine what failure means. Failure means I'm taking action. Failure means that I'm willing to take risks to accomplish my goals. Failure means I am actually willing to get uncomfortable and step into discomfort in order to learn how to get to my goals. Failure is the only way to winning. Like, literally, you cannot be a winner if you're not a loser sometimes. You cannot be successful if you don't fail at times. Everybody knows this. So it's just rewriting that narrative and that story for the client. Like, how can you actually get to your goal without failing? I can't. Okay, so what is it about failing that makes you so worried, concerned, uncomfortable, scared, that is stopping you from moving forward towards your goals? Do you worry more about the feeling of failure than you love the feeling of succeeding and reaching your goal, right? Do you hate that more than you love this? Usually the answer is no. Okay, let's eliminate that and let's do this. It's ultimately talking them through it. And then it's the same thing around who has shame around food. This is a really hard one because usually it's hard to determine shame around food. I think it's usually like they feel guilty when they splurge, right? So usually I would say when they have shame around their own habits with food is probably how I would word this question differently. The way to handle this with a client, in my opinion, if a client is struggling with shame around food and shame around how they're eating and shame around cravings and giving into cravings and binging, it's because they feel like a failure. They feel like if they bring it to their coach, they're going to get judged. They feel like they're alone in their issues and they feel like they're trapped. They don't have an extra strategy. They don't know how to work through this problem they're facing. And it puts them out of control. So we have to put them back into control. And the first part of that process, before even asking questions, because again, there's something that happens that causes them to eat, overeat, binge, give into cravings, so on and so forth. And that thing, we have to figure out what that is, because that's going to give us a lot of answers. And then from there, we have to learn how to eliminate the response to that trigger. Because the response to that trigger right now is eating and giving into cravings and not standing for what you told yourself you would do, right? Not sticking to your goals and sticking to your commitments, essentially. But it starts with removing the judgment, right? Most people who are ashamed of themselves during the dieting process, they have food shame or body shame or anything like that. They need to feel like they're normal for feeling that way, because they are. And the problem with most people today, coaches and clients included, is that they're afraid to speak on it and be transparent about it, because often it is looked down upon or judged for two reasons. Number one, people don't want to feel like they are incapable of accomplishing things on their own. Newsflash, if you hire a coach, it's because you need somebody to help you. Guess what? I have three coaches, technically. And that doesn't include like some of my best friends in the industry who I feel like kind of coach me as well, right? Because we coach each other. We all need a tribe, a community, help, coaching, guidance. We need something in our life. That's just how humans operate. So number one, we go, hey, I just want you to know that you're not alone, because a lot of people do this. A lot of people feel this way. And a lot of people are embarrassed to actually own it. Let me share some of my own personal fuck-ups and where I've made mistakes and where I've fallen off. And that humility and that transparency allows you to build trust with a client, and that's what's going to allow them to confide and open up to you. So the first step is, let me show you that it's normal. The second step is, let me show you some other normal people who we work with, who I work with, that go through this, and they got through it. So not only did they have the same issue, but they did exactly what I'm about to share with you, and it got them through the other side, and they fixed the issue. And I'm going to show you how to do that as well. Right? This is what allows them to have autonomy and feel like I have control and power and I can get through this situation. Right? So we just got to make them feel normal. Then we got to show them other examples of people that did it. Then we got to make them understand what they're actually doing. It's not as simple as, oh, I gave in again. Oh, shit. It's like, hey, no, you did give in, but you also failed to stick to what you told yourself you would do. Do you want to have self-belief and self-respect? Yes. Okay. Then we have to eliminate self-doubt. The reason you have a lot of self-doubt is because you keep not doing what you said you're going to do. They have to understand this. A lot of people make a bad decision. They go, oh, shit, I messed up. No. Let's dig into that and get a little deeper into what this actually means. Because, yeah, it puts more power into the fact that you fell off the diet and you're creating self-doubt. And that sounds harsh, but people need to hear this and they need to understand what they're doing. Because on the other side, when we correct that, guess what? You're building a lot of self-belief. It's a way bigger deal when you do it right as well. It's a huge, huge milestone. It's a huge accomplishment when you stick to your goals and stick to what you said you would do. And that's going to instill some aspects and some traits and characteristics in you that lead to a lot of success long term. So we dig deeper into both sides of this. And when we do that, we can work through the food shame they have. And I would also say this, there's nothing wrong with eliminating foods. I think people get so tied into flexible dieting and they think we have to be so inclusive with everything and fit it all into diet. No, you don't. There's nothing wrong with going, I can't control myself around those cookies right now, so I'm just not going to have them in the pantry. Especially if you don't have a kid or something like that. If you do have a kid, we're going to have to practice self-discipline. Let's put them somewhere and Blakely has her own, my daughter has her own snack cabinet. I'm not tempted to go in there, but God forbid, there's cookies that she wanted and I didn't want, I would just put them in there if they were a problem. The less you see something, the less discipline you have to use. The less discipline you have to use, the less stress you're going to accumulate in the diet, because stress accumulated during the diet is from consistently making choices that are you reframing from what you want, which is the cookie, to get what you need or want more, which is the goal, the result, the fat loss, right? But the cookie gives you immediate feedback and gratification. The long-term goal of fat loss does not. So if we eliminate these things, there's nothing wrong with that. And if you fit in a little bit, yeah, it hits your macros, but there's also a lot of research to show when you do something very consistently, it becomes habitual, even if that's bad food. So if you have one glass of wine because you can fit it in your diet every single day after work, you're associating, when I'm stressed, I drink wine. That's already a bad association. But now you're also telling yourself that you need wine after work. So now it's stress equals wine. Home from work equals wine. You do it. And then when you're like, I need to stop this because it's getting out of hand, you can't. It's hard. It's going to be a lot more work, right? So we need to avoid tying these things subconsciously together, just like my hotel wine, right? Stress wine, whatever it is, eliminate that. If you already go to something when you're stressed, start changing what you go to, because that's going to be the best thing you do for your mental health, and especially when it comes to food shaming and diet and all that stuff. Okay, I need to really rapid fire this, guys. This is bad. Advice on letting go of the scale and upping calories for the long game. So there's a couple ways to look at this, right? Number one, why do you want to get rid of the scale? And I say that only because there's a lot of research that points individuals who maintain a leaner and healthier body long-term consistently step on the scale. I think that if somebody feels like they have to step up, and this is a bit of a dichotomy, and I think a lot of people need to understand this better. And if coaches spent more time understanding the psychology of human nature and how our brains work and how our thought processes work, I think they would be much better coaches and we'd have a lot more successful transformations and long lasting change coming from the fitness industry. And I hope it gets to that point. Like that's part of our goal as a company is to shift that standard, right? Well, if we're talking about the scale and if somebody says, I need advice on how to let go of the scale. Okay, I can respect it if you want to let go of it, but why do you want to let go of it? Because if the answer is it messes with my head or it's very difficult for me to get on the scale and so on and so forth, like the number on the scale is really bugging me, I would say, hey, you shouldn't get rid of the scale. If you're trying to get rid of the scale because you mentally struggle when you step on the scale, I can respect that and I understand it, but I want to help you work through it. And getting rid of the scale isn't the answer, right? It's not the answer to remove the scale completely. The obstacle is the way. If you don't step on the scale, you can't overcome it. It controls you. That fear and that anxiety and that stress is not going to go away if you just remove the thing that causes it, because sooner or later it's going to come back. And in the back of your mind, you're always going to have this perception, this narrative that I can't step on the scale. I can't see the number on the scale. I associate numbers with bad things. Right? That's going to bleed into your bank account. You're going to have unhealthy financial success and wealth as well, and a mindset around money. I guarantee all these things are connected. The way your brain works isn't just this way with one thing. It's that way with everything once it becomes habitual and subconscious, right? So advice on letting go of the scale to me is like, hey, if you're maintaining a really healthy weight and you've been maintaining for years, of course, don't step on the scale. But if you just stopped your diet, I would say stay on it for a while. Make sure that you really can sustain the weight that you lost before you remove the scale. Now, upping calories for the long game and removing the scale is probably not a good combo, because if you're upping calories and you're trying to maintain weight, you need to up calories slowly and make sure that you're keeping the scale down. If you're trying to gain weight, you want to make sure that you gain the right amount of weight, because there's an amount of weight that you can gain that's good and healthy for muscle growth, and there's an amount of weight that you would gain that's going to build muscle, but also going to make you fat and unhealthy. And that's not what we're after, right? So the scale and your caloric intake, your macros, those are your numbers and your metrics to make sure you're in a good spot. So I wouldn't do one, and I wouldn't do them both at the same time. I would do one versus the other, right? I would let go of the scale when your only focus and goal is maintenance and that you've been maintaining your weight for a long time and you're not changing your calories. And I would do that before changing your calories. Actually, I would do it after you change your calories. I would remove, you know, like either up your calories, change them, take those to a place. And then when you're done tracking calories, then remove the scale. Now, if you're going to track calories for the rest of your life, then you can remove the scale first. But I highly doubt that's the process. You know, nobody ever has asked me, and so this could be a first, but I'd be shocked if you were like, I want to let go of the scale, but I don't want to ever let go of the calories. Usually it's like, hey, I want to get to a place where I can stop tracking all of it. I don't want to have to step on the scale. I don't want to have to measure my food. I don't want to have to track my calories, right? So if that's the thing, then we do it one at a time, usually with calories first, that you can intuitively eat and still step on the scale, making sure you maintain your weight. And when you're successful at that, you remove the scale as well. And you just stay disciplined enough to know you're staying within the range that you can stay in and still maintain your weight. Now, on the other side of it, if you want to play around with your calories and stuff, you kind of need the numbers, right? There's just no way around that. Now, if you're talking about the food scale, I guess this would be a completely different answer. And you would just be trying to intuitively up calories. I firmly believe that I would rather coach people on, so two things, and then I'll move to the next question. I would rather coach people through their issues with the numbers while using the numbers, because that's how they actually conquer it and it puts them in a state of control. A lot of people who say macro tracking and the numbers can be tedious, or they get too like OCD, or like I had somebody comment on one of my posts recently. I mean the post is going crazy. A lot of people obviously love it because it's got like thousands of shares. It's why intuitive eating doesn't work? Because you intuitively want Ben and Jerry's. And it's funny, but it's true, right? And somebody commented on it and said, that's not the case. Macros actually can create an eating disorder, and it's intuitive eating is probably better. And so I clicked on her profile and I could tell that she probably had an issue. So I commented back and I said, I respect your comment, but I disagree. Any diet can create an eating disorder. Paleo, carnivore, keto, Mediterranean, intermittent fasting, any kind of diet can get obsessive and cause disordered eating. Macros is one of those. Like the other ones, any of them can, right? There's even people, I don't remember what it's called, but when you intuitively eat so much that you're like, they get stuck into this way of eating healthy organic food and they can't eat anything else. The point is, any diet can create disordered eating. The numbers create it for them. That person wasn't coached properly. That person had an issue with the numbers. And instead of working through it, she got rid of the numbers and said that this is a bad thing. So now she's fearful of the numbers. That's not a good way to build a relationship with food or your body. And when I commented back with multiple things arguing, she agreed with me. And she said, actually, you're right. I had an issue with it. So she didn't do it right, right? So point being is that if you have an issue with the scale of the numbers, I would say before you cut any of those out, let's work through the problem with the problem being present so you can be back in control rather than having that up on a pedestal controlling you, and then you move on. What's your strategy for a client that says, I need variety? It depends. If I have a client who needs variety, says they need variety, I'm always going to ask why. And it also depends on if it's training and nutrition. So first, if it's training, I'm going to say, okay, why do you feel like this? Most of the time, it's just because they like the excitement of something new. And I go, okay, what do you want more, variety or results? 9 times out of 10, they're going to say results, right? Because that's why they hire me. So I'd say 10 times out of 10. And then I go, okay, cool. I understand that if variety makes you excited in the gym, that excitement's going to lead to more motivation. More motivation is going to lead to harder training. Harder training is going to lead to better results. So I'm all for it. However, can you meet me in the middle, right? Let's barter. There's certain things we should not create variety with because we're going to progress better if we don't change them. There's certain things that I'm not too worried about. A bicep curl, a lateral raise, hip abductions. Let's do a different hip abduction variation every week, and then every 6 weeks we cycle them. So we pick 6 variations and each week they change and we run that 3 times through. You know, it's an easy way to do it where each week is different, right? There's also times where I'll add drop sets and myo reps and exciting intensification techniques just to create some excitement in the gym because they're like, well, I don't really need change, I guess, because, you know, a bench press is bench press, but I just want to do something cool every once in a while. Dope. Okay, every 3rd week we're going to throw in some intensifications, right? So there's ways to do it properly. With nutrition, I have no problem with variety as long as it doesn't stop them from hitting their goals. So again, okay, you have, you want variety in the diet, so you're using all these different recipes and stuff. Is that causing inaccuracies within your tracking? If the answer is yes, then we want to nip that in the butt. Here's why too much variety is bad. Here's the amount of variety I would suggest, and here's how to implement it to make sure that we don't fall off, you know, the path, because we want to stay within our boundaries. And we can set time frames around that. You know, we have a goal that's going to take 4 months and you want variety. Okay, we're going to set these type of foods and everything for this amount of time, and then we'll switch it up because we need to have that every once in a while. But if we do it too much, we fall out of our lane, right? And this is, I think, the most important thing is explaining why. A lot of people just don't do that, which starts with asking them why. Because if you understand their motive behind wanting that variety, and then you can teach them how to implement some variety while still getting the results, everybody wins. The problem is a lot of people just say either A, no, we don't want to do that because it's going to screw things up, not explaining why to the client, or they give in to the variety and they allow all this variety to happen and the variety is throwing them off, right? So explain, go deeper, ask questions, and you should be doing this on the front end. The more intelligent you are as a coach, the more information you should be providing them in an easy way. You know, we've been filming all these testimonials and stuff, and so many other people tell me, like, one of the things that makes Tailored Coaching Method so special is we use science-based strategies, but we really break it down into approaches that are simple to understand. That is what makes us different, and that's what people give into and love so much, right? So being able to do that is huge. Now, I would also, you said, what's your strategy for a client that says, I need variety? Yeah, so going back to the first part of it, do they want results or do they want variety more when they say results? Then I'm gonna tell them why this is important, right? Why, again, most people think variety is good, but I'm gonna explain why variety can be bad. Variety can be bad because it can create a unstandardized approach. If we have a standardization of what we need to do in order to get us to the goal, and variety is taking us out of our lane and making the approach inaccurate because there is no standardization, that's when it becomes a problem. So let me explain that part. Because if I don't tell them why, none of it makes sense and it's not going to work. Like, that's the biggest thing, right? So I always try to make sure I do that. Next question. Please share about how your own weight loss journey helps your clients' journeys. 100%. I love this because it's so, so true. As a coach, if you're not practicing what you preach, you are not living by the standards you expect your clients to live by. As a parent, I can't tell my daughter to do something and not do it myself, right? Eat your veggies, yet I don't eat a single veggie. That doesn't make any sense, right? Like, there's that saying, and it's the stupidest saying in the world, do as I say, not as I do. Like, that makes me cringe. What? Do as I say, not as I do? So, hey, I don't do this, but I want you to do it? What? That doesn't make any sense, right? So point being, if you're a coach, if you're a nutritionist, if you're a trainer, you should be in shape. You should be healthy. You should be practicing what you should preach. You should be walking the walk. I think there's a lot of coaches in today's world that are generally healthy, but they're not really implementing the same strategies. They just, like, there's a lot of people in the training world, especially, like, they know about programming stuff, but they fell off. They don't have accountability. They lost themselves in the process. They get out of shape, but they still expect their clients to do it, and they put their clients through it. Number one, your clients aren't going to have as much buy-in with you if you don't practice what you preach and walk the walk. Number two, you can't have effective marketing and proof that your strategies, methods, concepts actually work if you're not living proof of them. Like, if I'm not looking like I actually do this shit, how is anybody going to trust that what I implement with my clients works? They won't, right? It doesn't compute. Number three, if you're not testing this stuff out on yourself first, it can be hard because then you got to test it out on somebody who's paying you. Test it out on yourself first, especially if you're new in the game. Like, that's a huge, huge point. So ultimately, like, yeah, I think it's really, really important for coaches to walk the walk, practice what they preach, and just be in shape, be in good shape, be strong, be fit, be healthy, because that's what you're promoting. That's what you're selling. If you're not a billboard and a walking proof of what you're selling, you're kind of full of shit, to be honest with you. Like, that sounds brutal, but that's it. And that doesn't mean you got to be shredded. It just means that you should be actually doing what you're trying to sell to people. You can't sell something to somebody that you don't use or believe in. It's just, and you can believe it works. Like, no, that's not true. You can believe that being healthy and being fit and being in shape is important and it's good and blah, 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 and people should invest in it. But if you don't look the part, it's because you don't believe in your own methods. Like, literally think about that. It means that what you're doing doesn't actually work that well. Otherwise, you would do it, you would use it, and you would be in shape, plain and simple. And it's not, it doesn't seem like it has to be this crazy thing to me. That's just common sense. So yes, I think it's very important that coaches, trainers, nutritionists, they are in shape, they're healthy, they walk the walk, they practice what they preach. It's going to create more buy-in from your clients. They're going to respect you more and be more motivated. It's also going to ensure that your product actually works, your service and your methods are actually good because you do it. And if you're out of shape, it means that you don't use your own stuff. And if you're not using it, it's because you don't believe in it. If you don't believe in it, it means it's crap. It doesn't work. But on top of that, I think it's important that you share, kind of like what this question said, it's important that you share that process as well. I tell this to coaches I mentor. I tell this to my own coaches all the time. You should be sharing your own journey, like the broadcast channel. All these questions are from the broadcast channel. That is me sharing my journey. I'm going to create content around it too, but I want to have this thread. I'm sharing what I'm doing. When I share it, it's going to show people even more. So that's a really, really big piece of it. And people get inspiration off that. They ask questions about it. It creates conversation. And again, it creates more buy-in and trust and belief in you and your method and your processes because you're actually doing the stuff you're trying to sell, right? So really, really important. I love that question. That's something I'm super passionate about. All right. On the opposite side of weight loss, this clearly came from the broadcast channel. Eating that much food is intimidating. How do you work past that? So how do I work past eating a lot of food to gain weight, which I am doing right now? I'm almost at 4,000 calories. I'm eating 530 grams of carbs, 55 grams of fat, and 240 to 250 grams of protein, which is more protein than I need. But when your carbs get up that high, you get a lot of protein from when you start building your calories into a surplus via carbs, you start tacking on protein from non let's call them non-anabolic sources. So not the best muscle building protein sources. So it's inevitable to get your protein above what you need. And if you enjoy that kind of diet, then you can leave it up there. How do I work past that is having long goals, right? So like, if you think of anybody, man, you're in a calorie deficit. How do you work past the hunger? How do you work past those days where you're kind of tired in the gym, right? You're doing a lot of cardio for your goals. How do you work past that? You're grappling in BJJ and you're getting choked out a few times a week. How do you work past that? In my case, you're bulking. So you're training a lot and you're eating a ton of food. How do you work past that? Both the food, but also the body image stuff. Like, I don't love the way my core looks right now in the mirror. Like, if I'm being honest, it's definitely not my favorite. It's, you know, I'm not like, I can still see some of my ab a little bit, but that's a part of the process, you know, and the image in my head is worse than what I see in the mirror because I'm human and that's what we do. We create a story and we're like, damn, you're getting fat. No, I'm not. Like, and I have confirmation from other people, like my coach, my wife, like, but you got to rewire that story. And I start telling myself that, I'm like, no, stop. Like, I know what I'm doing. So how do I work past that? The way I work past eating a lot of food and being in a big surplus when trying to build muscle, as well as like gaining weight and not letting the scale get to me and stuff like that, is by having a bigger vision for myself, for my body, for my physique, for my goals, having a growth mindset and a goal-driven pursuit towards something is exactly how I get through it. It's the same way when somebody's losing weight and their deficit is getting deeper and they're hungry. That's how they work through that. When somebody's training for an endurance race and they're running miles and miles and miles every week, that's how they get through that. When somebody's getting choked out on the mat in BJJ every week, that's how they get through that. Anytime somebody pursues a goal, there's going to be struggle. There's going to be discomfort. There's going to be risk. There's going to be action that has to be taken, time and money and effort invested. You can't get around it. So when I'm having to eat that much food, or when I look at myself in the mirror and I don't love what I see, or I see the scale and I'm like, wow, I'm up heavier than I've been in a long time and I'm gaining at the right rate and all that stuff, but still I think that in my head, the thing I do is I remind myself what I'm doing, why I'm doing it, and what the goal is, right? So I just remind myself of the bigger picture. I remind myself why I'm doing what I'm doing and where I'm headed. What is the goal I'm pursuing and what's the logic around it? Let's remove the emotion around the scale and around the food and around feeling kind of uncomfortable sometimes. What's the reality of what's going on right now? I'm working towards this goal. Why am I working towards that goal? Because I care about this. Why do you care about this? X, Y, Z. Why? X, Y, Z. Dive deeper and deeper, right? Going back to the goal is the only way to push through those aspects of the process. Because there's going to be times, like, you should be in the process because that's how you learn the most. That's how you grow the most. But there's going to be a lot of the times that the only way you learn and grow the most is by sitting through the discomfort and getting uncomfortable. And the only way to really understand why you're doing that, or how do I work past those uncomfortable moments during my journey, it's knowing that it's for a greater purpose. And when you have a vision of the goal and where you're headed, that is what's going to help you get through those moments. So that's the best answer I have for that one. Best hierarchy for tracking weekly volume in the gym: sets over tonnage or something else? I would say weekly sets. Tonnage works as well, which for people listening, tonnage would be sets times reps times weight. So if I did squats for 3 sets of 10 at 200 pounds, I would do 3 times 10 times 200, whatever that is my total tonnage for that day. And then I add all the tonnage up from the whole session, and that leads me to what my goal is. I think the best hierarchy for tracking weekly volume is going to be sets per week if your goal is muscle growth. I think if you're trying to build strength, it's going to be more closely tied to tonnage, because tonnage is still volume, but you still need to acquire volume to build strength. It's just the volume you're trying to acquire is going to be categorized and measured by how much weight you're lifting. So it's easier to do that by total tonnage. And for training volume to be pushing towards hypertrophy and muscle growth, it's going to be total sets done per muscle. So I would track your weekly volume from a set perspective. And then beneath that, as far as like the hierarchy goes, is I would put weekly progressions. So if I'm doing sets of 8 to 10, am I going from 8 times 200 pounds to 9 times 200 pounds to like 3 times 8 times 200 to 3 times 9 times 200 to 3 times 10, right? Because week one, you could do 8, 8, 8. Week two might be 9, 9, 8. Week three might be 10, 9, 9. And then week four, you might finally hit 3 sets of 10 with that same weight. Your tonnage has been going up, but if we're tracking weekly sets, it's been the same. So you don't need to like jump the gun and go, I need to add set this week because I've been doing 3 sets this whole time. Yeah, but you've added weight or you've added reps. So we also got to look at your weekly progression. Are you adding weight to the bar? Are you adding a rep to the bar? That's going to lead to progressions. And once you stall out as in now you get to a point where I can't lift any heavier than this for the reps and sets given, or I can't accumulate more reps with the weight given in these sets, that's when you need to basically tweak the training program. And that could be weeks and weeks and weeks, but that's the hierarchy. Do you plan your meals daily or weekly? I plan my meals weekly, but also daily. So like I basically plan my day out and then I just repeat it 6 times. And then Saturday is kind of like a free day. I actually eat really light during the morning, cause it's kind of for where I'm at in my journey. It's actually nice to not eat a bunch of food in the morning. And then I save some more calories for date night. Cause Saturday night's always date night, either at home date night or me and my wife go out to dinner. And I like to save some calories for some wine and some good food. Otherwise, I'm planning them out daily and then I'm just changing it. And then like I have a couple low days, because on my non-training days, I don't eat as many carbs. Still eat quite a bit of carbs, like 460 grams carbs on a low day, which is insane. I just cut carbs out of it. So like basically I have like a couple meals where I'll add rice cakes to them or add a little bit extra banana or something. And I just remove those on the low carb day. And it's not even low carb. It's just lower because I'm not training on those days. And it's just an easy way to adjust and help my stomach, to be honest with you. Gut health is important when you're gaining like this. But I usually, like, I plan out a day and then I just repeat it throughout the week. And then I have my whole week set. So I prep most of the week ahead of time. All right. Here's a good one. I'm going to do a couple more. Do you eat separately from your family at dinner? No. Never. We all eat as a family no matter what, even if I eat something different. So if you mean eat separately as in my food is different, then yeah, sometimes I do. Typically, like it's just the protein. So I'll usually either I prep mine in advance so Shannon doesn't have to worry about cooking a bunch of meals. Blakely likes to have different stuff all the time. Shannon likes a rotating menu. So she'll usually pick like one or two things, eats that throughout the week for dinner. I basically pick one thing, I eat that throughout the week for dinner, the same exact thing every day, because that's just easier for me. Sometimes I change it. But most of the time it's the same. I might go from like chicken to turkey and then every once in a while lean beef. And then I always keep a green veggie and then white rice. She usually does white rice. She usually has some other kind of protein veggie concoction. She loves cooking. And then my daughter, it's like, what can we get her to eat tonight? You know, we always got to bargain with like having some fruit or veggie on the plate and trying to get some protein while also allowing her to have some fun foods that she actually enjoys. But we all sit together at the table every single night. That is something that is like very, even if I have people out for a seminar, if I have podcast guests out, if I'm doing anything, I make a very, very strong point to be home between 5 and 5:15 every single day to sit at the table and eat dinner with my family. Like that's a really, really important standard for me. So that never changes. But sometimes we eat different things, you know, just typically. All right, I'm going to save the rest for next week because there is some really good ones. We still got some about backstage pumps. We got some about the biggest scam in the fitness industry. I got to do some research. I'm not sure. And then mentally working through weight gain as a female trying to build muscle, which I could probably go on and on about. So I'll definitely dive into those next week. Otherwise, this has been a rapid fire podcast with these broadcast channel questions. So again, if you're not in the broadcast channel, make sure that you either click the link in the description of this podcast or head over to my Instagram right now. At Cody McBroom is my Instagram handle. There's a link to it right in my profile. Click that, join the chat. Again, I'm mostly just sharing my journey, but there's so much value in that because that's how I learned a lot of what I know today in the early stages of my career. I would follow what other people did. I'd hire coaches. I would be around other coaches. I was just trying to pick up things from other people. And I used to love listening to interviews done with physique athletes, CrossFit competitors, people like that, to just see what do they train? How do they train? What do they do for their diet? How do they sleep? How are their recovery supplements? I love learning that stuff. So I'm trying to share as much as I can. And you get first dibs on the Q&A. At least for the time being, because that's what I'm deciding to do. So as always, I appreciate you guys being here. Please, please, please do me a huge favor and share this with a friend who could use this information and knowledge. Make sure that you leave us a 5-star rating and review if it is helping you in any way, shape, or form, because that really does help us grow this podcast and reach more people for free so we can help more people around the world. And I would love if you helped me accomplish that mission. And then last but not least, once again, join the broadcast channel so you can be in the loop of the private discussion during my physique journey. I will catch you guys next time. I appreciate you so much for being here. Keep on learning, keep on growing, and we will be back next week.